Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Good morning, folks. Monday, January 13th. Hope you had a great weekend and looking forward to this week as well. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, will join us at noon. We'll talk about the new direction of the Federal Reserve. California wildfires in the insurance industry will be a very interesting conversation. You're going to see a lot of similarities to what we have had to deal with here in this state for many decades. The Chinese economy struggles and economists there are being silenced. This is very important to the world economic landscape, and we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about a port strike that's been averted and bond sell-off, and whether or not there is a U.S. bank crisis being imminent out there, out in front of us. We'll talk to Peter W., Assistant Dean for Advanced Learning and Simulation at the LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. A lot of reports here, going back a couple of months now, but continuing to be written about, is that are we facing IV fluid and other medical supply shortages? And what is the answer? And are our medical protocols changing, as some of these articles are suggesting, as to how we use some of these medical supplies? And how much, if any, are the hospitals here in the New Orleans area rationing IV fluids? It's been talked about quite a bit around the country. Wanted to talk about a couple of things that are very, very interesting that's going on as we look at the fires in Los Angeles and how we're going to deal with aid there. It seems as though the Biden administration has done a number of things in order to try and preempt whatever the incoming Trump administration would be able to do. I guess that's okay. They're in need. Everybody understands where this is going. But Senator John Barrasso, the majority whip, Republican, says that he expects Congress to put stipulations on the aid money for the Los Angeles fire, requiring better state management of prevention and firefighting. And there's a lot of folks that are pushing back on this for... Interestingly, I'm not exactly sure why. I think it's time that we have a very robust, transparent conversation about what is the cause. There seems to be a lot of differing opinions on this matter. As we try to deal with the vegetation throughout the canyons and the like, and whether or not there can be fire break corridors that are developed around these neighborhoods, some state parks, some federal lands butt up against these neighborhoods. And I think it's really high time that we do have this conversation. And it seems as though there are many in Congress that believe that the only way it's going to be had is if they have strings attached to whatever monies or dollars that are sent out that way. The governor has somewhat pushed back on this issue, right? And as there's more and more revelations about budgeting, prioritization, shifting monies, empty reservoirs, whether or not there's water in the fire hydrants, why? Nobody seems to really know why. There's about six or seven different explanations as to what's happening out there, all of which don't really matter because the outcome is simply this. We have almost 15,000-16,000 structures at this point in time that have been destroyed, and thousands upon thousands of acres that have been scorched. And what's really interesting as you listen to the governor and what they talked about, and what a lot of the experts are saying, is that the state environmental rules that have been in place To give you an example, they're like several, maybe almost a dozen reservoirs that were approved for development to help with water management in 2014. In 2024, one of those received their permit to move forward. One since that period of time. All the others have been caught up in this morass of environmental rules, California being one of the most stringent states in the country. And their own public projects can't seem to get through the process fast enough because of all the environmental activism that goes on within that state. The environmental activists there are incredibly strong as a lobby and otherwise in influencing public policy in the state of California. And as a result, they are now paying the price. But what's interesting is what one of the first things Governor Gavin Newsom did in the aftermath, and they're still dealing with, I can't even say aftermath because this is still going on, still active fires. I think there might be one fire that's over 50% contained at this point in time. Guess what he did? He suspended the state environmental rules for rebuilding. He issued a 3-page order yesterday, covering all of Los Angeles and Ventura counties, and direct state agencies to coordinate with local governments to remove or expedite permitting and approval processes during the rebuilding. The most significant piece is a waiver on permitting requirements under the California, you got it, Environmental Quality Act, a landmark environmental law known colloquially as CEQA. The governor also announced that he had suspended all permitting requirements under the California State Coastal Act for properties rebuilding after the fires. State agencies and local land use commissions, the process of developing buildings and complexes and subsidized rent, the process for them to build is long. And one of the longest in the country, and more expensive than in almost every other state, right? And the law often requires developers to fund in-depth environmental studies on projects' potential impact on everything from wildlife to noise to views to traffic. And this process, these requirements add years to even like small projects. It's absolutely crazy. And these environmental groups, they're fiercely protective of any attempts to amend CEQA or the Coastal Act. And it's not unusual for these to be routinely suspended in emergencies and maybe for large projects such as, you got it, sports stadiums. Those seem to be very, very high priority. So they are able to get those quickly done. But this order was unusually extensive, they say. Now, think about this for a moment. A lot of what has happened has been as a result of the state environmental rules. And now we waive those rules. But what's interesting is there going to be a revisit of the building materials used? There's been some structures that you can see sitting out there like a sore thumb. The only one having survived with fireproof roofs and building materials utilized that are not as suspect to flying embers creating fires there. There are a number of other homes that have incorporated a number of other measures that have made a significant difference, and they survived the fires as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where all this goes, because it's very much going to influence the building codes. So many of you are probably saying, Newell, why is that important to us? That's going on in California. Well, it's the same thing here, right, as it relates to flood insurance. and whether or not we're going to continue to allow people to build a home on a slab. I have a home on a slab. Never again. It will not happen. I want to make sure that I'm going to be up above everyone else to ensure that I don't ever have to deal with a flood. And there's also a lot of what goes on in the infrastructure of a house that's easier to manage and maintain having a home off the ground, in my view, in my opinion. And as flood insurance continues to go up and up and up, and we require and have demanded from FEMA the underwriting criteria to these policies, and we hear crickets in return, it's interesting to see how this is ultimately going to play out. It's also interesting to see whether or not FEMA is going to enter this foray. Because a lot of these dollars that are flowing to California are going to be right through the FEMA highway. And the reason we should be curious and watch what's happening there is to see whether or not there are different rules for different folks. Because we're still going to be burdened for many years to come as to some of the nuances and the changes that have been made in the Flood Protection Act, right? So there are a lot of similarities in what the federal response is going to be here. And whether or not, this suspension of environmental rules, if they were so important that they were willing to accept the delays that were caused by these before, how can you in good conscience now suspend them for the entire redevelopment of huge swaths of land, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of structures? And if there's a county right next door that wasn't impacted by that fire at all and they're filing a permit tomorrow, they still are beholden to that standard, but no one else. Of course, this will probably get caught up in litigation at some point in time as it relates to due process and equal protection as it relates to these rules, because this is not like giving one structure a suspension certificate for a particular purpose. And kind of hypocritical on the part of the governor as well. And it's the same thing. All of the homes along Malibu Beach and all that have been contentious for decades under the California State Coastal Act. And same thing, same rules. Wondering, how will this be treated by FEMA and others, and obviously insurance agencies? And whether or not that mindset, because now they're saying that a lot of the new policies that are being promoted in California have some very exotic language. And it's something that we need to be concerned about here. Because when they get away with stuff there, it seems as though it reappears in other states. And we don't have to guess to whose benefit that language may be, right? So let us not think that we should not be concerned about what ultimately is going to happen out there. I continue to keep them in my thoughts and prayers because this incident is continuing to grow in size. But what's happening too, what's growing in size, is the changes both from an industry standpoint, insurance that is, as well as a governance standpoint, what state and local government and what they're willing to do in response and how all of this is going to ultimately be treated. Things are moving fast. And a lot of this may ultimately end up impacting us. Let's pivot on another front. Joe Biden continues to expand immigration, illegal immigration, and somewhat legal immigration, expanding protection for those individuals on the eve of rolling out of the White House on January 20th. So an earthquake struck El Salvador in 2001, and the U.S. government offered a reprieve to Salvadorans who were living there at the time that they could live in the U.S. for 18 months to give their home country a chance to recover. 24 years later, more than 234,000 of them are still living here under that same temporary reprieve. And guess what? This past Friday, President Biden gave them another 18 months of amnesty from deportation. Another 18-month reprieve after 24 years here on a temporary protective status. And for good measure, he also gave it to 600,000 Venezuelans and more than 100,000 Ukrainians and nearly 2,000 Sudanese. All told, about 1 million migrants have been given this additional time under the temporary protected status, where the whole reason for the getting it in the first place has dissipated. It's gone. It's been resolved. It's not there any longer. You can't say that this is not just about trying to restrict Trump, because there is no reason to extend it, right? Temporary protective status that everybody talks about, in an article I was reading about it the other day, and they were right, the purpose is a short-term bridge for countries facing natural disasters, epidemics, war, or political unrest. And when the conditions are recovered, the status is supposed to lapse, but it doesn't. Now, it's in the law now. We keep saying that we need immigration reformation. Why would you not just enforce the provisions that are there and be objective about it and say those conditions upon which we granted this status are gone? So TPS grants amnesty from deportation, but it also comes with a work permit, and it allows them to compete for jobs. And obviously, they're putting deeper roots into the U.S. And obviously, I guess politically, it becomes harder and harder for some to say, well, we got to make a decision here. Well, if you would do it in the first right of evaluating objectively each and every year whether or not the conditions upon which you granted TPS, whether they exist or not, and eliminate that status when it comes due, that's not heartless. That's a benefit that's expired. We do this to U.S. citizens every day. I don't understand why we have this moral complexity of dealing with these issues when it comes to immigration. They have no problem telling you and me and other citizens when we have a benefit that's expired, we can no longer take advantage of it. All the time. The last time Trump was president, he tried to cancel this status for some countries. Of course, they went to court and tied this thing up, and the court says that there were too many procedural corners that were cut. Really? What are those? They really couldn't point to any other than stuff that was created by the bureaucracy, again, in order to thwart complying with the intent of the law that was passed by Congress, right? We seem to forget all of that. It'll be interesting to see what's going to happen in the next 7 days. I'm sure that there's going to be more of that. So Mayorkas was asked about this, and you're going to love this, as it relates to the El Salvadorans. He says that parts of the country where the earthquake was struck in 2021, that the reason TPS is still warranted was struck in 2014. There was a heavy rainfall in 2023 and 2024. So heavy rainfalls now also are going to apply with temporary protected status. Now, when we have heavy rainfalls here in this country, I'm not aware of a protected status that we get, right? I'm not aware of additional benefits that we receive as citizens of this country. I may be wrong. If there are, please call in. Please remind me. I just don't know of any. And it doesn't make any sense why we've created this duality about the willingness to make decisions as it relates to any benefits that we may have as opposed to others. We'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll go to the talk lines when we get back. So give us a shout. This is Newell on WWL. On a text line, why are Democrat-led states being allowed to practice subversion and sabotage against the Trump administration, a.k.a. the United States government? You wonder why a lot of this is not labeled threat to democracy. In fact, Governor Gavin Newsom was bragging the other day that they had just completed their legislative efforts to develop a fund. I think it's $50 million to Trump-proof the state of California. That's going to be interesting. When you go hat in hand to the Trump administration, as Senator John Barrasso said, that the fire aid is going to come with strings attached. They've been tied up with 3 to 4 weeks now trying to get this legislation through the process to Trump-proof the state of California. Now California is going to need Donald Trump to be their best friend. Seems as though they're starting out on a slippery slope, and it's going to be quite interesting to see how this plays out when a lot of the complaints were always about these regulations and the bureaucracy in California relative to the California Environmental Quality Act. And what's the first thing that the governor does here? He abandons it. He suspends those rules. So it's quite interesting how this is going to play out between these counties, the two counties that are the beneficiary of the suspension, and all others as it relates to development. It's going to be interesting to see as well what the response to the strings that are attached to the financial aid that's going to be given to the state of California, how that will play out too. Because remember, everything from electric vehicles to carbon footprint to this to that, the backup in the supply chain because of the type of vehicles that they allow to go into the port, come out of the port, all the rules that have to deal with that, we all share in the additional cost of some of the whack-a-mole provisions that are provided for under California law. If it would only impact California, that would be one thing. But unfortunately for us, their demented view about a whole bunch of different things impacts our economy as well, because California is an incredibly large economy. In fact, the state economy is larger than most European countries. So it's going to be interesting to see how this ultimately plays out, and all the more reason why we have to watch what happens there. Let's go to JT out in Lafourche. JT, what say you?
Hey, how you doing? Look, I was reading some articles about the insurance market in California, and basically their rates and the way they kind of do their insurance market out there. They're the most regulated insurance market in the country. They have the lowest insurance rates in the country, so they're number 50. So what happens is the companies out there that write insurance are basically leaving the market, but they're not making enough in premiums to cover their potential losses.
I don't know that they were the cheapest, but they worked hard at regulating them, and now they are, in fact, allowing the insurance companies to do things. When I say now, this happened in 2024, to do things that they've never been allowed to do before.
They had like an insurance crisis because people were leaving the market. Just like in Louisiana, after we have all the hurricanes, you know, the insurance companies are kind of like, whoa, wait, that's too much potential risk. We got to get out. So what happened in California, they're starting to allow some rate increases. And then, like, State Farm is one of the biggest insurers out there. So I was reading an article just yesterday, actually, because I was looking this up. Because I know in Louisiana, our rates went through the roof, and our houses are worth way less. You know? So in California, and Pacific Palisades in particular, houses there are worth over 10 times what they are basically in southeast Louisiana. Okay, and their insurance premiums are actually less than what we pay. So for 10 times the risk, they pay less premiums. So the insurance companies are like, wait, we can't do that. We're not making enough money. It's like an actuarial thing. So they're just leaving the market. It's like, hey, the insurance commission says you're only allowed to raise rates 6 or 7% a year. And they're like, wait, the house value went from 300,000 25 years ago to 3 million. We can't do it on 5% a year. So that's the problem with, and so people are getting these rate increases, and they're going from like $5,000 to $18,000, and they're, whoa, that's too much money. But their $18,000 is what somebody, let's say in Grand Island, had a camp. That's what they're paying. Yeah, and their camp might be worth $400,000, but the house in Pacific Palisades is worth $4 million. So it's they're paying basically 5% of the rates of what we're paying.
Interestingly, what's emblematic of what you're talking about is that State Farm canceled 70% of the policies in the Pacific Palisades over the last 2 years. So they completely got out. More and more people moved to the FAIR plan, which is our citizens plan that we have here in Louisiana's government-backed plan. And now there's a belief that fundamentally that the FAIR plan is going to be completely upside down as a result of this event. And then you have the additional happenstance where you have a lot of folks, and they're not talking about this much, but there were some preliminary estimates. It could be in the double digits that are not insured. And there's going to be a significant question. And they're already talking about potential aid for those individuals that went uninsured and how that is going to ultimately play out as well. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you're up. What say you?
Hello?
Yeah, Kevin, go ahead.
It's the same thing that happened with Katrina. If that's the case, just do the right thing. Even if you with God's word are politicizing everything, and that's across the board, Republican, Democrat. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, Kevin, look, I'm not saying turn our back.
You're coming up with a statistical interpretation to justify the means, but the right thing to do is throw all that out the window, do the right thing. These are people in need. Same as Katrina was. We just had an incident on Bourbon Street. You asked the government for help with that. So just keep it fair. I'm independent.
I don't disagree with you. I'm not saying that
you're going to go with God's word or man's laws and statistical perception.
To what extent, Kevin?
And that brings it back to politics, because one thing about it, are you going to go the right and narrow way, or are you going to go by man's law? Period.
Yep. Period. Well, I appreciate the comments, Kevin. Thank you so much. I think the big question is to what end, to what extent, and do you evaluate at all the decisions that were made? The lack of leadership, or some are saying complete and total credible leadership. I would yawn on that one a little bit. But, I don't know that it can be a blank check mentality. Let's go to Frank. Frank, you're up. What say you?
Oh, Derek, turn it off. Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, dude, I got something that's been eating at me all weekend. So I know you can find out the answer. Now, we had those yellow barricade things that nobody knew we had that sat in some lot and got graffiti written all over them. And again, we didn't know we had them. Well, then over the weekend, I see the man that owns the equipment in town with a big old news conference, and new ones are now up. So are we paying for those too? We didn't pay $300,000 for the old ones.
Actually, the man's name is Peter Whitford. He's the CEO of Meridian Rapid Defense. They came in town and actually they painted those Archer barriers. They got them all cleaned up and repainted them and showed offered some additional training free of charge as to how to deploy that piece of equipment. Some of the appurtenances that attach to that equipment to move it and like. They're on the eighth iteration, I believe he said, relative to that apparatus, and they move a lot easier now. So the ease of administration is improved substantially. There are trailers that they have specifically designed to move those so that it's a lot easier to move them around. So he came in and he did it free of charge. And he brought all of their equipment up to the current standard, painted it, cleaned it up, and the like. And he said that they're ready to go, although that equipment could have been utilized and was in a position to be utilized in the state that it was in. But as he said, if you take some pride in this equipment and deploying it, you want it to be clean, you want it to look good, you want it to be appropriately painted so people can see it. All the things that go along with preventive maintenance. And at some point in time, somebody somewhere somehow has to give a damn. If you don't give a damn, that's what happens. You have run down equipment, you don't have the protocols in place, you don't have the infrastructure in place to provide preventive maintenance on your equipment or otherwise. We've been down this path before. We've seen the state of vehicles in the city. We've seen the state of the recreational department playgrounds. We see the state of subsurface drainage. We see the state of the way that we manage construction projects where materials are left for months on end after the construction project is over with. We see barricades left all over neutral grounds across the city. That's just emblematic of not giving a damn. Not paying attention to the details of the services that you provide day in and day out. Plain and simple. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll go back to the talk lines when we return. This is Newell on WWL. Welcome back, folks. We are entertaining calls on the talk line. Let's go to Jay. Jay, you're up. What say you?
Yeah, Newell, thank you for taking my call. One thing that just is beyond my belief is how one of our busiest streets in the city, Canal Street, is still goes from three lanes to two lanes there by Rampart, where the Hard Rock had collapsed over 5 years ago. 5 years that it's been for one of the busiest streets to be one lane restricted by a major intersection. And now the light has been out there for 3 months. It is a nightmare getting through there. It backs Canal Street up probably six or eight blocks on a high traffic time.
Yeah, and how long has that dilapidated hotel been right next to the interstate overpass right there at the end of Canal as well? I mean, how much longer do we have to deal with that eyesore, right? Jay, we keep losing you in and out. No, look, I agree with you. I've brought it up many times. They assure me that the lighting is going to be replaced there, the street lighting. It's one of the darkest areas along the Canal Street corridor. We have the incredible, iconic Sanger Theater there. And when you walk from the parking lots and the parking garages in that area to the Sanger, it just doesn't feel right. It's so dark, right? Allegedly, they're going to clean up that before the Super Bowl. Allegedly, those sidewalks are going to be repaired. Allegedly, the streets are going to be cleared, and we're no longer going to have those restrictions. And we've been, I went downtown the other day to go to the post office, and I think it was Saturday, if my memory serves me correct, and there were two or three intersections where the lights were blinking and they were out. And who knows how long that's going to go on. I mean, now street, you know, just intersectional lights, traffic control lights have become now a huge problem. There's hardly a time you can go downtown and one of them's not out for some reason or the other. And it's not like it's out and it gets repaired 2, 3, 4 days later. It's out and it may be 3 months later that ultimately something happens. And we've heard that, you know, it's the parts and the this and the that. Again, preventive maintenance, stocking parts to make sure that you have what's necessary to keep things alive and well and operational and so forth and so on, to be proactive, to maintain some stock of those parts that repeatedly go out. We know what they are, right? We have a good idea. So you stock some. If they're on back order for 90 days or 180 days, you know, just apply the formula, how many you need with the experience rate that you have for that piece of equipment, and you stock it. How hard can this be? It's not. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Dr. Peter W., Assistant Dean for Advanced Learning and Simulation at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. We'll be talking about an IV fluid shortage in this country.